What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another awesome edition of the Between the Tackles podcast. We're right at the beginning of the offseason here. We got a great episode in store for you. Be sure to check us out everywhere you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, you name it. We're there. Also on X, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, at Tackles Pod. Manish, we're back at it again. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. And we are very lucky to welcome the founder and editorial director of the Boston Sports Journal. Anybody who follows Boston Sports knows him and has known him for a very long time, Greg Bedard. Greg is also on CLNS Sports Media. You can find him every week during the season with appearances on 98.5, the Sports Hub, and at various times in the offseason as well. A longtime Boston Globe writer, Sports Illustrated. You know, he talks, he writes, he podcasts, he pretty much does everything. Greg Bedard, welcome. Thanks for coming on today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
We are going to do a deep dive, Greg, into the Patriots, off season, looking ahead in addition to what happened on Super Sunday. But I wanted to get your thoughts on really the story of the past few days around the league in which the NFL won their grievance against the Players Association in regards to publishing their player report cards. Now, I think it's a Pyrrhic victory because the union still is going to conduct these surveys, and they're going to release actually the 2026 survey in the coming days to players. So internally, they're going to run this survey, running the gamut essentially of every part of every team, but they're not now permitted to publish those results after an arbitration hearing that the NFL won. So I did want to get your thoughts just kind of on A, were you surprised that the NFL filed a grievance? And ultimately, what do you think this is going to mean essentially for players and owners?
Well, when it comes to NFL owners, nothing surprises me, especially how small and cheap and unaccountable that they can be. Normally the worst of the worst, starting with Woody Johnson in New York. These guys, they're just, they're rich. Most of them don't know what they're doing, run terrible franchises. And when somebody dares to actually point things out, they get all in a huff and they gotta, go to an arbitrator and like all this stuff. It's just, it's ridiculous. I mean, I just speaking on, the Patriots, who did not score well in the NFLPA grades. This just shows you, how out of touch some of these owners can be. And I do think Robert Kraft is in a lot of ways a really good, owner. But the previous two league meetings, when we met with Robert, and asked him about these report cards and some of the things on there, like the Patriots, like lack of family room. And there was stuff about the airplane and and the facilities and things like that. He was really, he had no idea until he saw it in the report card. So these things, have a definite service, I think have improved working conditions for the NFL players, which, some of them get paid a lot of money. There's a lot of things that are catered to, but that doesn't go for all players. And I think that it definitely serves a purpose. I can't wait. And, any players or agents who are listening to me right now, you can definitely forward that over to me. I protect my sources. They went through this exercise. It just shows how clueless NFL owners are. They go through this exercise and it's really not going to mean anything, because they're going to come out. They just can't publish it on their own website and it can't come from them. But, Adam Schefter, Diana Russini, Tom Pellicer, all these guys will be airing the grievances for all of us to see. So really pointless by the NFL trying to do this. And I look forward to when they are leaked and we can all read them.
I definitely agree with that, because when Schefter put out that basically the NFL tooting their own horn for winning that grievance. I was like, that's just not a good look for the league, for everybody out here that wants to know about all these things, especially like myself as a fan first. I want to see these things. But I want to transition into the Patriots. I'm a Patriots fan. I'm a local New Englander. That was a tough watch on Super Bowl Sunday, watching that game. Yep. You know, I was optimistic that they had a chance. I did not think they were going to get stomped the way that they did. But I want to start with, for me, the most glaring concern with the Patriots, and that is with the offensive line, specifically the left side of the offensive line, and Will Campbell. How did you feel that he did in this game?
awful. To people that don't know me, sort of like my claim to fame is I grade the film, and I have for years, and you know, I'm no football expert like the guys in the building, but I'm pretty good at what I do, and I definitely, you know, anytime I have certain takeaways from games, I check with people in the building, being like, am I crazy if I think this? And so Will Campbell was my lowest graded player in the game by far. I know there were a lot of different stats out there after the game, like Next Gen Stats had him for 14 pressures. I think PFF had him for 3 in the immediate aftermath. wow. I had him for 11.5 quarterback pressures in that game, which, just to put it into context, everybody thinks basically the worst Patriots offensive line anyone has ever seen was last year's. Gerard Mayo's year with Alex Van Pelt as the head coach, and you know, Drake May playing like the last 10 games, and they thought that, you know, Vidarian Lowe and Demontre Jacobs like couldn't put one foot in front of the other. The most pressures allowed by Demontre Jacobs last year, and that was the most for a position player. I did get Drake May. He had 7 quarterback pressures on his own in one game for holding on to the ball, but Demontre Jacobs had 6.5, and Will Campbell had 11.5.
wow.
That just gives you an idea of, you know, how poorly it went. You know, as to your question about, yeah, the offensive line. So some things showed up in that game, which showed up at times during the season. You know, Will Campbell's vertical sets, some of them having issues, you know, switching off stunts in games. But you know, what happened over the course of time, you know, towards the end of the season, because I do think a lot of people got a false sense of security with the Patriots schedule, and notably their offensive schedule. They played, according to FTN Fantasy DVOA, they played the 32nd ranked offensive schedule last season. And you know, once they played tougher teams like Buffalo the second time around after Sean McDermott had seen them once, and then of course in the playoffs, you know, the better coaches, they identified weaknesses and they went after these guys. And you know, look, you know, Will was beat up a bit with the MCL that he had, you know, but in general, there's a reason why no rookies have started together next to each other at left tackle and left guard in a Super Bowl previously. And it's because, you know, those guys just, there's a bunch of different reasons, but those guys just aren't ready physically yet, you know, coming straight from, basically they've been going almost full go since the start of their last college season. You know, because they go through the season and then it's playoffs, and then it's combine training, then it's pro day training, and then all of a sudden you're in an NFL camp. So both of them have a long ways to go in terms of, you know, strength, technique, like all that stuff. You know, I will to defend Jared Wilson a little bit. He was somewhat playing out of position this year. He was mostly viewed as a center coming out. Patriots didn't really have a left guard once Wes Schweitzer retired early in the offseason. He was signed to sort of be the stopgap at left guard. So they put Jared Wilson there, and he's just not the biggest guy. He's not the most powerful guy. But, yeah, it was a problem, and it was all over the place. I mean, even, you know, Morgan Moses, who played a great right tackle for the Patriots this year, he had the second most pressures, you know, in that game. So it was, you know, some of it was performance. Some of it was, you know, could Josh McDaniels do a few more things? Yeah. But I think a lot of it was the Seahawks were just better. And that was, to me, the number one thing in that game was the Seahawks just across the board were way more talented. You're talking about a team that had built their talent level up over the course of like four straight really good drafts. The Patriots have one decent draft to go on, and so they were just kind of overwhelmed.
Yeah, I definitely can see that. Now, I've seen some of your comments about Will Campbell, whether is he a guard, is he a tackle? What's your opinion on him? Do you think the Patriots are better served keeping him at left tackle or moving him to the left guard?
Well, I mean, I think as of right now, and I don't see it changing in the foreseeable future, I think they have, you know, no choice but to keep him at left tackle. I would give him another year, you know, give him an offseason to get stronger, recuperate, like all that stuff. And that really year two is when you get a real good look at these guys and where they are. And my opinion on Will Campbell has been pretty consistent since even he was coming out in the draft. Now, I did advocate for the Patriots taking him at number four because they had to do something, and nothing really materialized in free agency. They really wanted to sign Ronnie Stanley to be their left tackle, but he ended up going back to Baltimore, which was a blow to them, and sort of Will Campbell was the next best thing. I think he can play sort of a league average left tackle, maybe get a little bit more better than that. I mean, if he's Jake Matthews, are you happy with that? Are you ecstatic about that? I don't know. My question with guys like that, and it was with Will Campbell, was Will Campbell will help you win a lot of games and maybe some playoff games. But is he going to be good enough for you to win a Super Bowl, you know, and when you go up against these stacked defenses? And he had a tough time in the entire postseason. I've always thought, yeah, he could be a decent tackle. I've always thought because of his build, he's built low to the ground, he'll get stronger. His play demeanor, he borderlines on nasty at times. To me, has screamed left guard. Like I could see, I view him as a mix between Logan Mankins and Joe Tooney. And those are two pretty damn good left guards. Like both of them are borderline Hall of Famers. I think Tooney could definitely go in with the Super Bowl titles that he has and all that. But, I would be willing to give it another go. I'm not quitting on him at left tackle. I think what they need to do is look, Morgan Moses, we don't know whether he's going to come back. I assume he's going to, but you got to get the next guy ready at right tackle. And hopefully the best of both worlds. Maybe that guy pops and you're like, all of a sudden, like, no, he's not just a right tackle. Like, we think he can play left and we can get anybody to play right tackle. And now we kick Will Campbell inside and Jared Wilson is your center. And now, you know, you have really something up front. But I think it's Campbell for now, looking for better down the road.
Greg, I think the other element of this offense is a fairly obvious question about whether Drake May has sufficient weapons around him. Mm-hmm. Now, I thought that they made a good decision in bringing in Stephon Diggs, who did a lot of good things in his first year, but he is now entering the second year of his three-year deal. I believe they need to make a hard decision on him a couple days after the start of the league year, in about a month, in which $6 million of his injury guarantee becomes fully guaranteed. So that, in my estimation, is a line in the sand about determining whether you believe that Stephon Diggs should be a part of the 2026 Patriots. You know, he's not getting any younger. His cap number is fairly high, around $26, $27 million. And if you do cut him, you only have an $8 million cap charge. I guess this is my way of asking, should the Patriots bring back Stephon Diggs next year?
You know, it's one of the top questions of the Patriots offseason. And at this point, I don't have a great answer. I mean, there are some, you know, off-field concerns with him, you know, as we've all known about. I know in the building, once he got in the building, and actually his lack of attendance in the offseason and the OTAs and things like that was a bit of a concern with the coaching staff. But he did come in for a mandatory minicamp. Then he was there for the whole thing during training camp and, you know, the whole way during the season, like they could not rave more about him. And the Texans were the same way when he was there the year before. And I remember talking to Jeremy Springer at the Super Bowl, and the special teams coordinator, and he had been with the Rams previously, and he said, like, in Mac Hollins and Stephon Diggs, he said he's never seen two better teammates, like, ever. So in the building, he's good, really good, and a leader. There are off-field concerns with him. There's felony assault accusations that are hanging over his head. I thought they'd be dealt with by now. They have not. He was arraigned. There's also a couple of different times this year he's looked out of it and unfocused on the field. That would be the second Buffalo game, and he made a lot of mistakes in terms of his route running that he hadn't done all year. Then it comes out after the fact. That's when he was getting accused by this woman of strangulation. And then in the Super Bowl, he basically disappeared. And that's, you know, Cardi B, you know, he's breaking up with Cardi B in the middle of the game, and he's got another baby mama there. Like, you know, there's all – with Steph Diggs, there's always something. And, you know, you're going to have to factor in the contract, the off-field stuff. You know, what's your plan going forward if you don't have him? How can you address that in free agency or trades? What can you do in the draft? I would be more open to maybe kicking the can down the road a year and maybe just adding on a couple, restructuring his contract and maybe adding on a couple of dummy years just to see where I am. But yeah, it's a top question. I don't know. I mean, cause it's, you know, look, what are you going to go forward with? Mac Hollins, Kayshon Booty, DeMario Douglas, what kind of future does he have there? You have to address the tight end position. I think a lot of these guys, when you talk about their offense and how it sort of went downhill in the postseason, especially the Super Bowl, I mean, you're talking about a lot of 30-something guys like Diggs, Hooper, Henry, you know, Morgan Moses. You know, did they just run out of gas? And, you know, I think that's going to be one of the themes of the offseason about, like, all right, we had these stopgap guys, but can they come back and are they going to last the season again? So, yeah, it's a good question on Diggs. I don't know which way that's going to go right now.
Well, along those lines that you had mentioned, I mean, how could they replace him if he were not a part of the team? One pathway, and it's, you know, generated a lot of conversation in Philadelphia, is what is A.J. Brown's future in Philadelphia? And you know that Mike Vrabel has an affinity for A.J. Brown, didn't really want him traded in the first place a few years ago. That was more of a general manager decision. A.J. Brown, if he were available, should the Patriots make a aggressive play to try to trade for him?
I don't know how aggressive I would be. I could tell you, and this is related to what we just talked about, and I was trying to find A.J. Brown's age, but I can't. Oh, wait, hang on. He's going to be 29 next season.
Oh, 29.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, first of all, the Eagles – I don't know whether he's going to be available because if, you know, that contract is rough on the salary cap, and the Eagles could have a bunch of like retirements and other things that they have to deal about that. So, you know, I don't know if it's going to happen. You know, I do think the Patriots are very cognizant, especially going forward. This was sort of like and there's a lot of parallels and contradictions. It's going to be coming up to what the Washington Commanders did when they went to the NFC Championship game. The Patriots basically did exactly what the Commanders did, and their free agency was they brought in a bunch of like stopgap guys that they knew the system of Dan Quinn and all that stuff, and they brought the floor up really quickly, and they went to the NFC Championship game. Patriots did the same thing. They go to the Super Bowl. The Commanders, though, are the cautionary tale because they decided to roll it back with all those guys, and they also doubled down training for Laremy Tunsil, Debo Samuel. I think there was somebody else they traded for. And you saw what happened to them. And I remember talking to one of the Patriots front office people about the Commanders at some point during the season, and the Commanders had come in. The Commanders also signed like Dietrich Wise from the Patriots, Jonathan Jones. We're talking about like 30-something guys. And I remember the Patriots executive telling me, like, when they watched the film of the Commanders joint practice, they were like, that team is slow. And that's at the forefront of their mind. Like, this is not a scenario where I think the Patriots are going to look at, we made a Super Bowl run, we're Max Crosby and AJ Brown away from winning the whole thing. I don't think that's in the cards at all. Maybe one of the players, but this is a front office that, despite their run this year at the trade deadline, they didn't make any trades, didn't part with any picks. They had three like borderline roster guys, a guy by the name of Braden Swinson, a tight end, CJ Dupree, and there was one other guy that, you know, I didn't think belonged on a 53-man roster. But instead of losing them to other teams, you know, being signed off their practice squad, they put them on their roster and they basically didn't play the whole year. So this is a front office that I think basically views this past season as gravy, and maybe a little bit of cover to really get hard into the rebuild that they really think this team needs. And that means keeping your draft picks, getting more draft picks, getting young, hitting in the draft, and that's sort of the way forward for the Patriots, not just one or two guys here.
I think that's interesting. What would you say if you were going to rank the needs on this team going into the offseason here? Obviously, we're talking about wide receiver. You mentioned tight end, which I think is right up there. What would you say biggest need for this Patriots team?
Yeah, so, you know, there's a few different spots that are you know, screaming out. You know, at least a left guard, if not two guards. It depends on how much change you want in one offseason. You know, let's say Will Campbell is a center, left tackle, Jared Wilson / Ben Browner at center, and Morgan Moses is back at right tackle. You know, Owenu's making a lot of money. His weight has been an issue, especially since he signed his big contract. He did play really good football the second half of the season. You know, but I think without a doubt, they need some sort of really good left guard, sort of put between the two young players. Cause I anticipate that Jared Wilson is going to get the first shot at center. He is not a left guard, and that played out over the course of the season. You know, so is that in the draft? Is that, do you find a guy like Joel Bitonio from the Browns, who Vrabel was with last year? You know, does he come in and still have some legs left? So I think the left guard is definitely up there, or two guards, because they need to get more nasty in the run game. They don't have enough nasty on that offensive line. And so one or two, I would be fine with two. Edge is going to be a huge need. Harold Landry disappeared after his knee injury. He's going to get surgery and all that. Was a good player before he got hurt, but he's older. How much can you depend on him? Kalyvon Chaisson is a free agent. Played really well the end of his prior season with the Raiders. Continued that with the Patriots. I think he's going to get paid by somebody in the offseason. Is that going to be the Patriots? I doubt it. This edge is supposed to be a deep class in this draft. So do you draft a couple guys, maybe add a free agent at edge? You know, obviously, you know, you mentioned tight end. You could make the argument to just start over at tight end. You know, probably keep Hunter Henry around to see what you have and tutor guys. But, you know, do you sign somebody? Do you draft a couple guys? That room needs to be revamped going forward. Wide receiver, of course, we talked about. A lot of it depends on, you know, who you're moving on from or not. But they definitely need to find some sort of a guy on the outside that opens things up for everybody else underneath. I think that was a problem in the playoffs. Those are the major ones. You know, I think that, you know, linebacker, they're going to need to get younger and faster at some point. Jalen Hawkins, a safety, is a free agent. I would anticipate bringing him back. But those are sort of the major things that I would look at.
Talking about tight end, I think you're spot on with keeping Hunter Henry around, because I think he's a proven leader in the locker room there. He's been around, he's been through the suck, and I think restructuring him, or in some capacity having him here next year going forward, would be great. I love a guy like Isaiah Likely from Baltimore. It seems like Baltimore's having a lot of they're not making any progress in any kind of contract extension with them down there. He's a local guy. He's from up here in New England. I would love to have him as a part of this team. I think he'd slot right in as a great weapon for Drake May.
Yeah. I mean, I could definitely see that. I mean, I do think, you know, I haven't studied him a lot. I have seen them, you know, certainly in crossover film. Patriots played the Ravens this past season. In my mind, he's not much of a blocker, and he's more of a move tight end. I think that was part of the problem with Hunter Henry over the course of the season, that he got really worn down because, I mean, you know, he's not a bad blocker, but he's not a very good blocker. He's more of a pass catcher. And because of all the issues in blocking, and they had to keep more tight ends in to help, you know, Campbell and Moses, and they bring in extra tight ends. Basically, like, Hunter Henry had to block way too much this year, and he got really worn down over the course of a very long season. And so if you bring Likely in, does that change anything really for Hunter Henry? So, you know, they definitely need to find, if it's not for this year, at least going forward, maybe, you know, 1 year of Henry and then moving on, but they need to find some Y tight end that can block, you know, a dual threat. And I think Likely would be more of a move sort of F tight end, but yeah, I mean, I could see that.
Mm-hmm. Greg, I just kind of want to circle back. You started this off by saying that getting two guards might be a prudent choice for the Patriots. So I wanted to ask about somebody who I'm sure you're familiar with in the division, a pedigree player who has been really besieged by injury. But in New York, Elijah Vera Tucker, former first round pick. He's only played 43 games in 5 seasons, missed this season due to a torn triceps, I believe. Just given his skill set and given the fact, frankly, that you probably get him for relatively cheap, would he be a good fit for the New England Patriots?
You're singing my music, Manish, because I was looking over list today and his name popped up and I was like, ooh, that's interesting. I mean, yeah, I mean, if the price is right, he is definitely a guy that I would consider. From what I remember about him in the pre-draft process, and I forget exactly what year he came out, I know that the Patriots, I think Belichick was definitely still here. You know, he came out 2021, so that would have been Bill's last season, maybe. No, but anyways, you know, at 14, I think the Patriots picked right after that. Might have been the Mac Jones. Yeah,
it was Mac Jones.
Yeah, and if Vera Tucker was still there, I do think they would have considered picking him over Mac Jones. They thought that much of him, and from what I remember, he also has inside, outside, some versatility. He's 6'4", 315. At least that was him coming out. But, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the talent is definitely there. I know he's had big-time injury problems, and, you know, that's an issue. But I do think that, you know, he would be perfect because, you know, like I said, they have this guy by the name of Ben Brown, and he's sort of – they just signed him in season to a 2-year contract extension, and he plays a decent center and guard. He's better at center. He had to play there 2 years ago when David Andrews got hurt, and you know, he gives you protection. And so if you move on from Michael Wenu, who, you know, he's due to make $16 million in base salary next year, no guaranteed money. You know, Vera Tucker would be a perfect guy to slide in there, a cost-effective option. And if he hits, great. If he doesn't or he gets hurt, then I have Ben Brown. He's sort of the new Ted Karras that the Patriots used to have, went on to become a starter with the Bengals. Then I'm protected. But I think, yeah, I think they need to make a heavy investment either in the draft or in free agency with left guard, because that's more of an immediate need. I think at right guard, you could get away with sort of a cost-effective signing where the upside is absolutely huge.
Yeah, and Vera Tucker, you had mentioned his versatility. He has played tackle for a number of different reasons at the pro level as well. So, again, can he stay healthy? That's the million-dollar question. It's probably not going to cost that much more to get him because of the injuries. The other position that you mentioned was edge. And I know the Patriots only have roughly $35 million in cap space. That can be finagled, of course, as you know. But would they take a big swing at the edge position? And I'm obviously asking you about what would they take Trey Hendrickson or be interested in free agency and acquiring Hendrickson, despite the fact that he is an older player.
Yeah, I I would tend to doubt it. I think, you know, a lot of it depends on what they do with Harold Landry, because, you know, Harold Landry, who has a history with Vrabel, he actually got a lot bigger contract. That, I mean, he got 14.5 APY coming out of Tennessee, and he's going to be 30 this season. He's signed through 2027. If, you know, and like I said, he played well until he got hurt. If they think it was just the injury and he'll be fine, then I think he comes back. And that's a pretty big chunk of change to me. I think that they don't, like I said before about, you know, how this season went and where they think they are in the rebuild. You know, I don't think they view themselves as being one player away on defense at edge, like a Hendrickson or a Max Crosby. Of course, with Hendrickson, it's just money. I don't think it's a trade. Crosby would be a trade, right, and probably an extension. But that kind of move would surprise me, unless they get rid of Harold Landry's contract and that opens up. But you also talk about the Patriots spending. You know, they spent a lot this past offseason, not just on the team, but the coaching changes, and they're also building a new practice facility, and Kraft has talked all about this. So you realize he's keeping tabs. Patriots normally, when they spend big in an offseason, and I want to say they spent like $320 million in cash just on players this past offseason. The last time they did that was 2021, when Belichick tried to save his job by spending a bunch of money in free agency. And the next year, they did not spend very much. So to me, unless Robert Kraft is really like intoxicated by the Super Bowl, and I want to win another Super Bowl before I die and all this stuff, and he goes all in with his chips, you know, unless he's changed his tune with Vrabel there, I wouldn't expect the Patriots to be, you know, all that open with their wallet this offseason.
Hey, it's funny you say that, because you know, typically, you know this, Greg, covering the league for as long as you have, the big spenders in free agency typically don't get that return the first year. But this year, two of the top five spenders were the Patriots and Seattle, and they've been in the Super Bowl. So I think it might be an outlier type of situation. But, yeah, it is rare, as you said, to go consecutive year spending that much in free agency.
No question. I was just looking at my spreadsheet, sort of, because this is going to be the last year. This is the last year of the 3-year cycle under the collective bargaining agreement, where you have to be at 90% of the CBA cash floor, something like that. The Patriots don't have to worry about it. They've already, I think, met that in the first 2 years with how much they spent this past offseason. But, you know, I don't think they have a, I think they'll go back. If I had to guess, right now they're at like $230 million in cash. We think the cap, what did they say the cap is going to be, like 310?
It's somewhere between, I think, 301 to 305, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Okay, so I would say the Patriots have about another $70 million in cash to spend this year at the max. So they could extend Christian Gonzalez this summer. You know, all that good stuff.
Would you extend Christian Gonzalez this summer?
He's won me over, and I think he's won over the Patriots, because I do think that Vrabel had some comments over the course of the season about Gonzalez, that definitely made you raise your eyebrow a little bit, just in terms of, you know, it was good to see him respond and be physical in this game, you know, basically saying like he wasn't beforehand. And there were times this season where he was not physical. And you looked at the amount of zone defense that the Patriots played, and that was their MO in Tennessee, going back and looking at it. They play predominantly zone, and they believe in their zone, and they believe in their blitzes and like all this stuff. So if you're not going to have Christian Gonzalez man up all the time, and he didn't even do that in the Super Bowl. Of course, JSN went out. I mean, he certainly played really well in the Super Bowl. But I do think the Patriots still need to have that discussion about, like, you know, what does our defense look like going forward? How are we going to play our coverages? Because if we're not going to be a 40, 50% man team, what's the point in paying Christian Gonzalez $35, $40 million a year? But it sure is nice to have that ability in your back pocket. And I think that's where the Patriots were by the end of the season. Like, you know, we see his value now, and I guess they're going to have to do it, but I do not think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I think I kind of had the same reservations that you did because of the amount they play zone. And obviously today, right before we came on recording, the Patriots officially promoted Zach Kerr to be their defensive coordinator. So that was more or less a formality. You know, we knew all knew that was coming, but don't expect any of that scheme to change. Just circling back quickly to the Harold Landry talk, I don't think he's going anywhere. I mean, his dead cap hit, if they were to cut him, is like $19 million or something like that. So he's here at least through 2026. So I think that rules out Trey Hendrickson, because we know how the crafts spend there. So you aren't really sitting in the ballpark of thinking that this team is going to move out of 31 to try to make a splash with an acquisition of a guy like a Max Crosby or anyone else for that matter.
You know, look, I mean, you know, like with any team, I think that it depends who's there and who's falling. I would say no. And if there's a player there that they really like, whether that's a wide receiver, a guard, a tackle, you know, maybe they stay at 31. I think if I had to guess, I think they would be more inclined to trade out of that spot, that somebody wants to trade into the first round with the fifth year option and all that stuff, which I think is a little bit, you know, overrated, because if you hit on your first round draft pick, you're not waiting. And unless you're Jerry Jones, like an idiot, go into the fifth year option and franchise tag, like you're re-upping them and trying to get them as cheaply as possible, you know, after 3 or 4 years. You know, I think that the Patriots are more likely to, you know, trade back and try to accumulate picks, and really, you know, they're really missing a young layer of talent on this team. And I think they're very intent on building that up or rebuilding that as quickly as possible. I think last year's draft was a good start. They need a couple more drafts like that, where they can have a sustainable winner, where we are talking about making a move like the Packers made for Micah Parsons or making a Max Crosby trade. I just don't think they view themselves as being anywhere really close to that yet.
But aren't they, Greg, in a precarious position? Because everything that you said about team building makes a lot of sense, but they are in a very narrow window of having a young dynamic quarterback on his rookie contract. So if you're, you know, theoretically waiting to get younger pieces, by the time you get those pieces, you're going to have to pay, you know, potentially Drake May $50 to $60 million a year. So how do you think the front office is going to balance this idea of, yeah, we don't want to throw our chips to the middle of the table just because we went to the Super Bowl this year, versus we are under a relatively tight deadline before we have to pay May?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And, you know, it's a dilemma. You know, it's sort of, I think they would strike a happy medium where, you know, maybe this year they stay the course and hope they're really good at draft evaluations, and they put together another draft and, you know, maybe go all in a little bit in 2027. That's the last year of his contract, 28. So I think, and you raise a good point, Manish, I think that, you know, when I look at them, I think that, you know, in an ideal world, like, you know, this team probably would have went from 4 wins to like 7 wins or 8 or 9 and just missing the playoffs. And then people could see, all right, they're building to something. You know, but I do think these guys are laser focused. Like, they're not falling in love with what they did. They've been focused and very disciplined the entire time. I think that's going to continue. I think the happy medium is maybe, you know, staying the course for one more season. And then in Drake May, so, you know, 2027 is the fourth year of his contract. 28 would be his fifth year, which almost all quarterbacks, they go to the fifth year because it is cost effective, you know, to give them the fifth year option. And then, you know, they'll sign them to whatever after that. So, you know, you raise a good point about Drake May and the advantage that you have. You know, I think they're also mindful of, like, when they get there, they want to make sure they have a really good team around, you know, Drake May, and are developing people and things like that. So I think there's going to be a happy medium that you make a good point, but so maybe they can't go two more years of relying on the draft and targeted signings. Maybe it's just one more year. I think that would be the plan.
Let's talk about Drake May. Obviously, the Super Bowl performance was not what we had seen all year. Actually, all playoffs was not what we saw throughout the whole season. The competition was better. The defenses were better. Do you think that the way that that Super Bowl went down has a chance to negatively impact his development, just from a mental standpoint, more than anything else? Or do you see that this is something that could be used as fuel going forward?
Yeah, I think the latter.
Me too.
I don't really think there's any chance of this. You know, certainly I'm sure Drake May's licking his wounds a little bit, because you're right. He did not play well in the entire postseason. You know, he did not play well at all in the Super Bowl. I put nothing into his injury, because everybody that I talked to within the organization before or after the Super Bowl, all of them basically said the same thing. He's fine. He's fine. He's just a little bit beat up. It's been a long season, you know, but nothing that would affect him in the game. And I didn't see anything on film that led me to believe that, you know, this guy's just hurt. He's not getting surgery. You haven't heard one person from inside the walls of One Patriot Place publicly or privately saying, coming out and leak. It would be the easiest thing in the world for them to leak it. And Mike Vrabel and his people certainly have very close relationships with some national people. It would be the easiest thing in the world to give their young franchise quarterback cover by leaking. Go easy on Drake. You have no idea what he was battling. You know, he really battled for us. You've heard none of that. And in fact, Mike Vrabel's downplayed the injury the entire time. So let's just take that off the table, even though a lot of Patriots fans don't want to. you know, he did not play well at all. There were about 7 to 8 plays in this game, first half into the third quarter, that he could have made that he didn't. It wasn't always about pressure. A lot of his accuracy issues in the postseason were footwork related. And it's what happens when he goes up against really good defenses and when he doesn't have a great idea of what he's going to see post snap. When that happens, and this goes back to training camp, it was happening in the training camp. It was happening in the joint practices. And it led me to be like, I don't know about this season, you know, for the Patriots. And I went from having them at 11 wins to 9 wins. And that was part of it, but also their lack of depth, which of course never showed up because no one ever got hurt on this team, which is unbelievable. So I think that, you know, you would see Drake May when he was having a tough time, he would get his feet would be all over the place. He would start to get like a bit of a hitch, which you heard in NFL films. One of the Seattle Seahawks talked about it. So there were issues that got exploited that have been there all along in the postseason. But knowing what I know about Drake May and also, you know, Josh McDaniels, he's a lot like a golden retriever. He sort of forgets everything. He's been unbelievable this year about, like, he might have a deficiency in his game one week. The next week he has solved it. And I expect him to attack his weaknesses. He's going to study the film hard. He's got to remember that other teams are going to spend the offseason, especially in the AFC East, looking at Drake May film and dialing even more on how to attack his weaknesses in the offseason. So he's got to be ready for that. But I think he's going to get bigger, stronger, smarter. I think this is going to fuel him to come back and finish things off the right way.
Do the Pats have a viable contender in 2026? Look, I know that there's a lot of roster management that needs to happen between now and week one with free agency and the draft. But you know, as things stand now, before all of those events, Do you view, and I'm really asking about the Bills, I don't think the Jets or the Dolphins with their new head coach are going to be viable contenders, but if you had to handicap it at this early stage, do you think the Patriots will be favored, should be favored in the AFC East?
Well, I do think they should be favored in the AFC East, you know, because, you know, we know the Jets and Dolphins are kind of in disarray. You know, even though they just sort of promoted Joe Brady, you know, I don't know. I don't think change is great in those circumstances. So, you know, I think the Bills will definitely be competitive, but I don't view them as a huge threat in the AFC East. We'll have to see how things go. And, you know, their roster needs a lot of work. It was part of the reason why they didn't end up being a contender and going on a run. So we'll have to see how that goes. As far as being a, I expect the Patriots to be favored in the AFC East. As far as being a Super Bowl contender, a contender to go back to the Super Bowl, I would have to say no right now. I mean, you know, look, this Patriots team went to the Super Bowl and they didn't have to play Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, or Josh Allen. I mean, you know, they played Justin Herbert behind a terrible offensive line. CJ Stroud was a puddle, and Jared Stidham to go to the Super Bowl. They're not getting that kind of road again. And the other thing is, you know, everybody knows about their schedule. They did play a ridiculously easy schedule this year. The schedule next year is a bear, and they play at Chicago, at Detroit, at Kansas City, at the Chargers. They at home, Broncos, Packers, Vikings. I don't know. Can they? I mean, at least the defense will be good. At the Jaguars, at Seattle. They have Pittsburgh at home. So, and they have two West Coast trips. They didn't have to travel west of the Mississippi this year. They have two West Coast trips, and from what I know, they're going to have an international game. And so, for the Patriots, that would be a really tough road. I would say the odds are they don't make it back to the Super Bowl. I would put them as favorites in the AFC East, maybe to win a playoff game or two. But to do what they did this year, I think those are long odds.
It was a gravy season. It was a gravy season. We were playing with house money all year. It was great. It was great to watch it. Great to be a part of it. You know, it's funny. I mean, the Patriots have to play a first-place schedule next year after not having to do it for so long. And I think I saw something that the Bills, playing a second-place schedule, still have a harder schedule than the Patriots do, because they're going to see who was it? It was Baltimore and Houston, where the Patriots are seeing Jacksonville and Pittsburgh. So that was a fortunate bounce for the Patriots going into next season. I'm like insanely biased against the Buffalo Bills because of friends outside of, you know, just pure fandom sake. So I'm the natural Bills hater on the pod. Manish likes to get me going on it from time to time. But yeah, Manish, you got anything else for Greg?
Yeah. Just one last thing before we get you out of here, Greg. You covered Vrabel as a player, and now he's a coach. Anything surprise you about this first year? I mean, it's one thing to kind of reset the culture, and you know when you're, you know, at least a year and a half, 2 years removed from Belichick, but still, you know, arguably the best coach of the Super Bowl era, to come in and kind of reset the culture and remake it as quickly as he did from an outsider's perspective was eye opening. You know, just knowing Vrabel the way you do for all this time. Did that surprise you at all that he was able to come in and really revamp things at an accelerated pace?
So just to correct one thing, I did not cover him as a player up close.
I'm sorry about that.
I was in the division though, covering the Dolphins, and then from afar with the Packers. I had spent time with him previously in Tennessee, you know, with Sports Illustrated, going there and doing a couple stories. But you know, to answer your question, well, I was not surprised that he came in here and turned things around very quickly. I've always thought a lot of Mike as a coach. I think he's one of the best in the NFL. I thought that before he got fired in Tennessee. you know, I did a lot of reporting, and, you know, maybe it didn't help things with his relationship with Amy Strunk Adams about how I thought Vrabel was looking for an exit his last year in Tennessee. And, you know, but to answer your question about this year, I mean, in general, no, I'm not surprised. But I will say, and I wrote this for my column on Super Bowl Sunday, because, you know, you can be around the team, but you don't – the Super Bowl is different. Like, when your team is there and you get access to these guys and it's, you know, media night and a couple other days and it's a full hour and they're sort of like, you know, some of them are sick of you. Some of them are just relaxed. It was definitely a different setting to see the Patriots. And so I got to spend a lot of time talking to players and coaches that week. And I was absolutely blown away by what I came to learn about how close this team was. I always thought, you know, whatever. I hear that. Yeah. So they, you know, they won 14 games and they all love each other. Yeah. A lot of 14 teams love each 14 win teams love each other. You know, they hadn't lost a game since September, for crying out loud. Like, it's easy for people to get along. So I was just like, yeah, whatever. I don't really take any stock in that. I'm sure the Seahawks are saying some of the same things, and they were. But talking to people, I was blown away. I think Mike Vrabel, I don't know where it came from. I don't know how much of the stuff he did in Tennessee. I don't know if some of it was stuff he borrowed from Stefanski when he was with him in Cleveland. Did he think a lot of when he had that sort of year off as a consultant for the Browns? But his ability to connect with these people and, like, you know, little things, like he has this thing called the four H's, which he did borrow from Kevin Stefanski, where he started off and people, he was the first one that did it to say, like, your four H's, which is like, you know, what are your hopes? What's your history? I forget what the H's are right now, but the point of it is, like, Mike Vrabel was the first one to get up there and he was very vulnerable. And all the players would do that and all the coaches over the course of the season. And there were, like, little things like that, like the rookies decorating the assistant coaches' offices during the holidays, like, you know, some corny stuff, but, you know, hearing all of this stuff and hearing how, like, you know, Doug Marrone, who, Manish, you know very well, hearing Doug Marrone sitting with him, and he was almost brought to tears to talk about how close this team was. And he talking about how, I never thought it was possible that, again, that a team could be this close. He thought those days were over, but Mike Vrabel brought it back. I was absolutely blown away. And so I think that was the thing that, and I think it was the secret sauce of this year's Patriots, how much, how close they grew, how much they had each other's backs, you know, Mike greeting every player as they came off the field, wins or losses. Like, you know, for a while I was just like, dude, can't you do that in the locker room? Like, why are you making a show out here? But apparently there's, you know, issues with how much room there is and things like that. But I think basically what we saw was a 360 degree Mike Vrabel. He was always an intense player and a very smart player. And he was very good with clock management with John Stryker, you know, as his right hand man. And they were always advanced in that and always had great game plans and all that. But for him to connect to these professional football players, a lot of them who have been in the league for years, I think really got them to play their very, very best, to play when they were hurt sometimes, or maybe in other situations they wouldn't have. So, yeah, Mike Vrabel is the real deal. What he did this season was astounding. A lot of it was because of him. And if you weren't a believer before in Mike Vrabel, you should be now.
High praise. We get high praise seemingly from all corners of the NFL when it comes to Mike Vrabel, and just count how he connects not only with players and coaches, but just, you know, people in general. I just think it speaks a lot about his character, you know, who he is. And, you know, I'm thoroughly blown away by all these stories that come out about him that have nothing to do with wins and losses.
I mean, it's no, you know, it's no BS. I mean, he even, like, you know, like, let's not put this out on social media or anything, but there were, like, little things that he did even with the media this year. I mean, not only, like, you know, sort of like, you know, off the record gaggles and things like that, where there weren't that many. There was one in the, his immediate hiring, but like, you know, it's an example of his personal touch where you wouldn't have thought of this before, where, you know, one of the last days of training camp, he invited us to bring our families to training camp, and they had like a meal for him and things like that. And, you know, his rationale was like, you know, they're a part of this too. And that just goes, if he's doing that for the media, imagine what he's doing for his own players and his own staff members. And, you know, it's the dude had it wired. Like he thought of everything. I don't know if it was that year off from coaching or what, but his personal touch in a lot of ways this year was sort of the cherry on top for these Patriots.
Music to my ears as a Patriots fan. I love hearing all this stuff. Greg, thank you again for taking the time to come on with Manish and myself tonight to talk everything Patriots. You can catch Greg on X at Greg A. Bedard, Boston Sports Journal. And I look forward to hearing you go back and forth with Felger and Maz on the radio when you have to do that, because I love when you put them in their place. So can't wait for it. Thanks again for taking the time to come out with us. And hopefully we'll get to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, guys. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks, Greg.